This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, Parshas Truma. So, three offerings to share this evening. Three very interesting ideas. There's an interesting sequence of Sefer Shmos. We started off with like two halves almost. The first half of Sefer Shmos talks about Mitzrayim, all the famous stories that we talk about on Seder night, starting off with the Shibud in Mitzrayim, the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Makas in Mitzrayim, the negotiations between Paro and Moshe Rabbeinu, and then after the Makas, the Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Kriyas Yamsuf, and leading to Matan Torah. And then that stops part one of Sefer Shmos. And then you go into Mishpatim, with all the details of the laws that we read about last week in the Parsha. And then you move on to the second half of the Sedra, of the Sefer, which is largely to do with the Mishkan, which begins in this week's Sedra. So what exactly is the rationale between that order, going from Yisro to Mishpatim, and then to Truma? What is that all about? And second of all, why is it that the second half of Sefer Shmos, Truma, Tetzaveh, Kisisa, even Vayakal Pekudei, which largely deal with the Mishkan, why is it even in Sefer Shmos? Isn't this more suited for Sefer Vayikra? Because that's all to do with the Karbonos, and the Karbonos take place in the Mishkan. So wouldn't it be better off to sort of start Sefer Vayikra earlier, almost, really with the Parshas Truma, this week's Sedra? So why the order, and why are these last five Sedras in Sefer Shmos at all? So the idea is something we can draw on, that we mentioned this Ramban a couple of times already so far in Sefer Shmos, but the Ramban in the Hakdama to Shmos, I think, gives us an idea, perhaps an answer to this question. But let me begin with an interesting idea that I saw in the writing of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. He tells the following story. A man is walking down the road and he sees a big quarry where people are working. And three people are working and cutting stone. So the guy goes over to them and he says to the first person, he says, "Why are you cutting stone?" So he says, "It's my job. That's what I do." He says to the next guy, "What are you doing?" He says, I'm cutting stone. Uh-huh. And then he says to the third person, "What are you doing?" And the third person says to him, who's doing exactly the same act as the first two people, he says, "I'm building a palace. That's what I'm doing." What's the difference between the responses? They're all doing the same thing. One has been imbued with a vision, a grand vision, of what he's actually doing. He's not just cutting stone, he's building a palace. All doing the same thing, he's got a grand vision. And the point is that great leaders have the ability to connect a vision with sometimes some very tedious detail. But if you can have the vision without the detail, then the vision will never ever come to fruition. The leader has got to have this grand vision, but he's got to be able to connect that vision with very specific details. And whilst vision is very important, and without it, the details, like I say, are very tiresome. So therefore, in Parshas Yisro, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the grand vision of what he expects of Klal Yisrael. And that's really the mission statement of Klal Yisrael, which is, "Va'atem tziyuli mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh." We are meant to be a holy nation, and a nation of priests. That's the grand vision. And then, straight afterwards, you have the detail. What's the detail? Parshas Mishpatim. With literally one after the other, exact detail of how you can become this goy kadosh, this mamleches kohanim. Thomas Edison is quoted as saying that genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. That it's hard work. You've got to have the vision, but you've got to have the detail and the tenacity to achieve that detail, that focus as well. It's interesting, there's a fellow called Rabbi Osher Wade. Maybe you've heard of him, maybe you've heard him speak. He came to school a couple of times over the years. And he is a ger, and he started off life as a... He became a Presbyterian minister. And he's got a very interesting life story. But one of the things I remember he said was one of the notable points on his journey, that he used to give drushes and shul in church. Right? He used to give, stand up, and he was a minister. And he would give drushes and talks in a very general sense. Be just, be charitable, be kind. But where's the detail? And when he explored various religions, he always encountered that difficulty. And then he came to Judaism, he came to Yiddishkeit. And he saw be charitable. And he opens up a Shulchan Aruch in Hilchas in Yerudea, in Hilchas Daka, you see, I think it's 10 or 12 simonim, long detailed chapters about how to give Daka. And if you explore it in detail, it becomes like a tax manual. So you've got the grand vision of giving Daka, but you've also got the detail of exactly how. That's exactly the point. It's connecting the vision with the detail. So that's the explanation of the juxtaposition between Yisro followed by Mishpatim. And then, when you've got that combination of vision and detail, then you get to Parshas Truma. How so? What is Parshas Truma about? So the Ramban in Hakdama to Sefer Shemoy says, Hishlim HaKosuf Sefer Bereishis, this is in the second box on the page. If you're listening online, email me at j.golker@gmail.com, I'll send you the handout. The Ramban says that you have Sefer Yitzira, which is Bereishis, and then you move on to Sefer HaGolus VaHaGu'ula. That's what he famously calls Sefer Shmois. And what exactly is that? Hine HaGolus Eina Nishlam Ad Yom Shuvim Mekoimam. When do you achieve Gu'ula? It's not a political Gu'ula, it's not a geographical Gu'ula, but rather it's a spiritual one. So what is it? How do you achieve it? V'osu HaMishkan V'shav HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'hishrash Shchinos Shchinosei B'neihem. When we build the Mishkan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shchina, His Divine Presence, rests, lives with Klal Yisrael, Oz Shavuel Ma'ilas Avosom, then they can go back to that very lofty level of the Avos. So you see that once you've got the vision, then you have detail, then you have Truma, which is the manifestation of the combination of vision and detail. That transcendence, that divine presence, which is achieved through the combination of vision and detail. So that explains why you have Yisrei, then Mishpatim, and then Truma. You have the vision, you have the detail, and then you have the Hashras HaShchina, which is really what Geula is. And that's why the parshas that deal with the Mishkan are indeed in Sefer Shemois, because that's exactly the point. The point is, Sefer Shemois is Geula. Geula is not just leaving Mitzrayim, it's not only just receiving the Torah, it's living the Torah with Parshas Mishpatim, and then having that connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Hashras HaShchina, amongst us. So that's the first idea. Now, the second idea is an amazing concept that I was alerted to when Rabbi Aaron Lopiansky came to London a few weeks ago. He came to school and we spoke to the students and to the parents, and then he did a Q&A with the Rebbes. So I thought he was there for a short time. I thought the best use of his time is just to really give quality time to the Rebbes, that the Rebbes can ask the questions. And it was a fabulous hour or so that he gave us. And one of the things he mentioned, lots of very interesting points, but one of the things he mentioned was a moshel that the Baal Shem Tov gives in this week's parasha. And you'll see why it's so relevant and so important. The pasuk says in the beginning of Parshas Truma, Vayidaber Hashem, is paragraph 2, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemer, Dabel b'nei Yisrael v'yikchu li truma me'ez kol ish asher yidvenu liboy. Take truma from every person whose heart inspires him. Nedivas lev. Tikhu es trumasi. Now, there's a sefer Baal Shem Tov al HaTorah. The Baal Shem didn't write much, but a lot of what we have is from his Talmidim. And this is a sefer called Baal Shem Tov al HaTorah. So this is what he says. Me'ez kol ish asher yidvenu liboy. Tikhu es trumasi. B'shem HaBaal Shem Tov. It's said in the name of the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Chassidus. Hainu. She'kol odom tzorich. A person has got to strategize, come up with ideas, to use midas in a positive way, from external, physical, material desires, to channel them and use them to make midas tovus, or midas haros hashehir gul bohem, to channel those and divert them in a more positive way. Mehem yikach derech lavodes habayir baruch hu, to think how to use it to serve Hashem. Ba'isa hacheshek ba'isa ha'tayvu, with the same passion, with the same desire. Look in the next paragraph. Shamaiti mimoiri b'shem Rabbeinu Sajagon. I heard in the name of the Sajagon, one of the great Goinim, that's the period before the Rishonim, she'royu la'odom lachshek b'chol advarim hagashmim. It's appropriate for a person to have desires for physical things, and through that, a person can sort of arouse his desire, his passion, towards more lofty things, towards Avodas Hashem. Kamo Moshel, like the following Moshel. Shamaiti Memori, I learned it from my Rebbe, the Baal Shem Tov. Moshel Lemelech. Listen to this Moshel. Shehoyeloi Ben, a king, yeah, every good Moshel has a king. A king has a son. And the king wants to teach his son wisdom, all different types of wisdom that he'll need. And he hires many teachers to teach him. And the kid is not interested. He's totally apathetic, he's disinterested, he's not listening to all the wise men that the father, the king, hires. They give up hope from teaching him. You can't teach a kid who's disinterested. But one wise man sticks the course and he hangs in there. One time, the prince, the son of the king, he meets a young lady and he falls in love. And the wise man is not very happy. And he goes to the king and he informs on the king and he says, Your son has met this young lady and I don't like it. Veheshivu, and the father, the king, responds, Im kein meacha sheyesh lechemda gam shehu begashmi afilu hochi mizeh yovu lekol hachochmas. The king says, fantastic, great. If he suddenly has got some interest in something, I can channel that interest in a positive way. So this is what he does. He instructs this one teacher that's left. He says, bring the young lady into the palace and she should stay there, but you're not allowed to arrange for him to meet this young lady until he's learned one area of wisdom. So one area of wisdom. And then, after he learns one area of wisdom, he goes, oh, this is quite interesting. And then he learns another area of Chochmah. Until eventually he's learned all of the Chochmah. And then he becomes very wise. Oz Moas Abasul Anal. He doesn't actually want to date this young lady in the end. Because he wants to marry a princess and not an ordinary lady. Etc. Fine, so that is the marshal. There's a concept of Aaron Opiansky said, I'll ask you this question, what would you say? You'll go sailing. Yeah, imagine a Cholomoy trip, what are you going to do? You're already planning Cholomoy trips. What are you going to do sailing? You're in the lake, you're in an ocean. What is better? Having no wind at all, let's say you want to go from A to B. Is it better to have no wind whatsoever, or to have a wind in the direction opposite you? You want to go from A to B and the wind is pushing you back towards A. Which is better, no wind or a wind in the opposite direction against which you want to go? I would imagine, yeah, no wind is better because a wind in the opposite direction is just going to push you back. But apparently that's not true. There's something called tacking. Tacking, T-A-C-K-I-N-G, is a way of sailing where you've got a wind opposite you, where you can use the strength, the power of that wind, and you sort of sail in sort of a zigzag fashion, where you can use the wind and sort of it gives you a momentum to move in the direction you want to go. But the nimshel is very important, because sometimes a person has got a spark, he's got a passion, and it could be a negative passion. But if it's used in the correct way, then actually it'll be very productive. There's one, Huttner had a certain Talmud who he wasn't very pleased. He felt that he could have impacted him more. And he apparently once said that if he could have got this Talmud angry just once, he would have achieved something more with him. He could have impacted him more. What's Pshat? He would have got him angry, he would have provoked a little bit of, get the engine going, and then I can channel it. But I couldn't get that engine going in the way that I wanted to. A few weeks ago, there was an article by Mordechai Kamenetsky in the Ami magazine, and he was writing about Rav Fivel Cohen. Rav Fivel Cohen was a tremendous poser who died a couple of months ago. I happened to be in America when he died. He was in New York. He was a great poser. He wrote a svarim called the Badei HaShulcha. Anyone who learns smicha will be very familiar with his svarim. They're sort of classics. In his own lifetime, they became absolute classics. And anyway, he was nifta a few months ago. And Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky tells an amazing anecdote, an amazing story about him. When Raviv Cohen was a young boy, he was 8 years old, his Rebbe once came into the Beis HaMedrash. It was Ben Astar, I don't know exactly when it was, but there was no one in the Beis HaMedrash apart from the 8-year-old Raviv Cohen, who was standing in front of the Aron HaKodesh. The Aron HaKodesh was open, and this kid was standing there with Tehillim, crying his eyes out, davening. So the Rebbe went over to him and said, Fiverr, what's up? Is everything okay? So he said, yeah. He said, why are you davening? He said, because the Yankees have got a very important game today, and I'm davening that they should win. Now, when you're in a Rebbe in that situation, what do you do? It's very tempting to berate the child and say to him, that's not what we daven for. You don't stand in front of an Aron HaKodesh with Sifrei Torah and daven for the Yankees. But that's not what this Rebbe did. The Rebbe put his arm around him and said, Feivel, let's daven together. And he took it to him and he davened with him. And that created a very special bond between the two of them. And he was able to use that bond to channel the potential, the huge potential that Feivel Cohen had. And, you know, and it became the Badei HaShulchan. It's an astonishing, an amazing story. But that is tacking. You take this energy, this momentum, and it may be counterproductive, but if you use it in a clever fashion, you can achieve your, it will help you, it will give you momentum towards your destination. Okay, let's move on to one idea, to a further idea. This is an amazing idea. A little bit mathematical, but we'll get there, don't worry. I need a prop here. Okay, this will be my prop. Okay, take a look. We've got the Kelim and the Mishkan. Three Kelim I want to focus on. The Mizbeach, the Shulchan, and the Aron. This is astonishing. The Pasuk says, V'osiso Mizbeach Mikdor Ketores Atze Shittin Tase Oisai. Here are the dimensions of the Mizbeach. Now, by the way, we're talking about the Mizbeach, which is in the Kodesh, the inner Mizbeach. Yeah, Mizbeach HaPnimi. Amo Orkoi, it's one Amo in length. V'amo Rochboi, one Amo in width. Ravua yeah, it's got to be square, an amah by an amah. Vamosayim koimosay, and it's two amahs tall. So you can picture it. Again, I haven't got the exact size, but you get the idea. It's two amahs tall, and then it's square on the top, an amah by an amah. How much is an amah? An amah is six tefachim. So an amah goes from the tip of the finger to the elbow, and there are six tefachim. A tefach is a fist. So if you put two fists, 3, 4, 5, 6, that's an amah. So an amah is this amount, 6 tefachim. A mizbeach, therefore, is 1 amah by 1 amah, which is 6 tefachim by 6 tefachim, and 2 tefachim, v'amosayim kemosay. That's the mizbeach. What about the shulchan? Next pasuk. V'asisa shulchan, again, in it's the next pasuk on the sheet, but in the Torah, it's not actually in this order. V'asisa shulchan atzei shittim, Amosayim arkay va'amarachboy. The shulchan is 2 by 1, va'amavachetzi kumosay, and 1.5 amas high. So imagine the table. The table's here. That's about right. About an amma and a half high. About an amma that way, and 2 amas that way. So literally very similar to the size of these tables. Lastly, the aron, va'asu aron atse shittim amosayim v'chetzi arkay. The Aron is 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5. Okay, Atkan. Now, there is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, in the 6th parak in Mishnah Hay. The Mishnah says that there are 3 crowns, and each of them have certain attributes. So, for example, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, G'day l'Torah, Torah is great, is greater than the other two. Yosem min ha-kohuna min ha-malchus. Shamalchus niknis b'shleishim ma'alos. Malchus is acquired with 30 attributes. V'ha'kuhuna b'esrim v'arba, and kuhuna only has 24. V'ha'toira niknis b'arboim v'shmoyin drachim. Torah has 48, and then the Mishnah goes and lists them. The 48 kinyonei Torah. These are, you know, things we learn about in Pirkei Avos in the summer months. It's an amazing Mishnah, it needs a lot of explanation. There's Sfarim written just on this Mishnah. But Talmud, B'Shmias HaOizin, Arichas Fasayim, Minas HaLev, 48 ways to acquire Torah. So Torah is greater than Kohuna, than Malchus, because Torah has 48 ways, attributes with which you acquire it. Malchus has 30 and Kuna has 24. Now, says the Maharal, Derech HaChaim, which is his Pirush on Pirkei Avos, he says the following. Listen to this, amazing. V'nireh lo ima. Kiyesh remez be'elu ha-mailas. There is a hint in these mailas. I'm on the second page, the third paragraph of paragraph three. Ki ha-mizbeach hoya olav zor. On the mizbeach, there was a little crown, a diadem going all the way around it. V'hu simen l'kesek kuhuna. The mizbeach is the remit, if you like, of the kohen. And on the mizbeach, you've got like a little crown going around it. V'ha-mizbeach hoya amma al amma. How big was the mizbeach? We just said it was one amma by one amma. V'chashetakiv chut echot soviv ha-mizbeach. If you put a measure, the perimeter of the mizbeach, if it's one amma by one amma, that's six tefachim by six tefachim. So therefore, you're going to have 6 + 6 + 6 + 6, which is 24. That is a remez to the 24 attributes of kuhuna, because the mizbeach has a perimeter of 24. Beautiful. And therefore, keneged minus hakuna shor amma shish tefachim. Beautiful. Next one. V'ashulchan she'olov hazar simen lekeser malchus. The shulchan is a representation of keser malchus, the crown of kingship. Hoya amma v'chetzi gavoy v'amma rachboy. Now, what was the dimensions of the height of the shulchan? It was 1.5 ammas. V'amma rachboy, and it was 1 amma wide. So if you imagine, it's 9 tefachim high, 6 tefachim along, 9 down, and 6 across. So 6 plus 9 is 15, 6 plus 9 again, another 15, that's 30. So that gives you 30, which again is the 30, keneged ma'ales ha-malchus, shur shloshim, which corresponds to the 30 attributes of malchus. Beautiful. Now what about the Aron? Of course, is Torah. The Aron holds the luchos, and that is the manifestation of Torah. Says the Maharal, V'ha'oron hoya amasayim v'chetzi arkoi, v'amma v'chetzi rachboi, v'amma v'chetzi klemosoi. It's 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5. Again, if you put a string around the perimeters of the Aron, yachut mem ches tefachim. Why? Ki amosayim v'chetzi, 6 × 2.5, how many tefachim are there on each side? 2.5. So you get 15. 15 plus 1.5 is 9. So 15 plus 9 is 24. And then on the other side as well, that's 48. So amazingly, if you take the perimeter of each of these three, you get the same attributes as you get in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. You get the Mizbeach is going to have 24, which is Kuhuna. You're going to have the Shulchan, which is Malchus, which gives you 30. And then you have the Aron, which gives you 48. Beautiful. That is the Maharal's take on this. And he gives an explanation of this. But then he's got a question. I don't know if you've picked up on this, but it's a great observation. Oh, very good. Says the Maharal, last line there, you're not being standardized. You're not being consistent. Why? Because when it comes to the Mizbeach and the Aron, you're measuring an aerial view. The Mizbeach, imagine, here's the Mizbeach. Again, not the direct exact dimensions of the shape, but you've got an Amma by an Amma. That's the aerial view. And it's 2 ammas tall, but I don't care about the height. I'm measuring the aerial view, the surface level, 6 tefachim by 6 tefachim. So therefore, it's the perimeter is going to be 6 + 6 + 6 + 6 is 24. And so too, when it comes to the Aron, you've got the top of the Aron. What is the size of the top of the aerial view of the Aron? It's 2.5 tefachim, 2.5 ammas, I mean, by 1.5. So 2.5 is 15, 1.5 is 9, that's 24, plus 15 and 9 is 48. But when it comes to the Shulchan, I'm not taking an aerial view. I'm taking a side view, because the side view is it's 1.5 by 1, which is 9. That's 9, and that's 6, and that's 9, and that's 6, which gives you 30. Why don't I take a surface view? Why don't I take an aerial view? That's the Maharal's question. He goes on to answer it. Whatever he answers. But I heard, I've got it in my notes, and I don't remember hearing it or seeing it. I looked in his book, I couldn't find it, but someone must have told it to me in his name. But Rabbi Emanuel Bernstein gives a beautiful answer. He says, there is a difference between the Mizbeach and the Aron on the one hand, and the Shulchan on the other. because the Mizbeach and the Aron are basically Kuhuna and Torah is between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore it's been Odom L'Mokum, and therefore an aerial view is appropriate. It represents the perspective of what you're doing. Kuhuna represents between me and Hashem, and therefore an aerial view represents Ben Odom L'Mokum. But the Shulchan represents the king. Part of the king's responsibility is to his people. That's Ben Odom L'Chaveru. Take a look at the Gemara in Brachos. The Brachos, the famous Gemara in Brachos, given on the base. David HaMelech, the Gemara says, used to wake up at midnight. Yeah, we're all familiar with the Gemara. What alarm clock did David HaMelech have? So he had a harp that he would put by the window, and the midnight northern wind would blow, and it would start playing the harp, and that was David HaMelech's alarm clock. Take a look, the bottom box of the page. Kinner Hoyatolu Lamalam Mitosa Shal David. There was a harp above the bed of David HaMelech. V'kivin Shegiya Chatzis Laila, when it became midnight, Bo Ruach Tzafonis V'Neshavus V'Yemenagin Me'elov. The northern wind blew, and it started playing the harp, and that woke David HaMelech up. And he learned for several hours until Amad HaShachar, until dawn. When dawn arose, the Chachomim came in to David HaMelech. Adonenu HaMelech, Amcho Yisrael, Srichim Parnosa. Your people need Parnosa. You know, you've got to do your kingly duties. You see that the kingly duties are to do with Bein Odom L'Chaveru, between man and fellow man. So therefore, when it comes to the Shulchan, which is the Malchus, which represents Bein Odom L'Chaveru, so then it's appropriate to take not an aerial view, but a side view. And therefore it's 9 by 6, 9 and 6, and therefore the perimeter that we have is indeed 30. So something very, very interesting regarding the dimensions of the Mizbeach and the Shulchan and the Aron. Okay, let's just summarize the three ideas that we said. The first idea was why the order of Yisro, then Mishpatim, and then Truma, and why this sort of series of sedras, the last five sedras of Sefer Shemos, why indeed are they in Sefer Shemos? The answer is you need that combination. You need the combination of vision and then detail. And that really is greatness, is when a leader has the ability to connect the large, majestic vision with the highly specific details. And then once you have that combination of vision and detail, then you get the Hashros Hashchina, then you get the sort of the fulfillment of the combination of vision and detail. Then we had this fabulous idea of the Baal Shem Tov, the Moshel of the king and the son, and his being indifferent and uninterested in learning. And then this one teacher sees that he meets this young lady, and he's going to take that spark, he's going to take that sort of interest and channel it in a positive way. He teaches him one chokhmah, he wants to know more and more and more. And that really is an important message for parents, for machanchim, to find out what a child is interested in, to find that spark, and then to channel it, to ignite it, and to channel it. And then the moshel of Rabbi Aaron Lopiansky regarding tacking in sailing, using a wind, a counter wind, is actually more beneficial than no wind at all. If you've got no wind, there's apathy. You know, they say, what's the difference between ignorance and apathy? I don't know and I don't care. Right? Ignorance and apathy. A person is apathetic, then it's very hard work. But if you've got some sort of spark, some sort of interest, then you can sort of direct it in a positive way, as per the story of Rav Avraham Cohen, the Batei HaShulchan, when he was a young boy of 8 years old. And then lastly, the dimensions of the Mizbeach, the Shulchan and the Aron, a fascinating insight of the Maharal, that you have the perimeters of these three items. One, the Mizbeach, which represents Kohuna, gives you 24, the Shulchan, which is Malchus, which is 30, and the Aron, 48, that represents the attributes, as per the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, the minus of Torah, of the Shulchan, and of Malchus, and of Kohuna. And the difficulty is, how come that when it comes to the Aron and the Mizbeach, we take a surface level, an aerial view, but yet when it comes to the Shulchan, we take a side view? The answer is because the Mizbeach and the Aron are Bein Odom L'Mokum, and therefore an aerial view is appropriate, but the Shulchan is Bein Odom L'Chaveru, and therefore a side view is the appropriate measure. Okay, Peseda, we'll leave it there. Have a good night.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.